Hi, welcome back. It's been a while, we know, but we got
holidays
and very busy with stuff.
And then we wanted to make sure that we had all the topics for this new season picked out and researched. And so we've went more into the darker aspect this season, I think. Don't you?
Yeah, and we were going to do one last night, but to be honest, we watched the Ohio State game.
Yep.
And then watched it again today on YouTube.
I guess we're homers that way. But this actually is about not necessarily a serial killer, but more of a mass murderer. Richard Speck.
I don't know. I think if you kill eight people, you're a serial killer.
Yeah, but they classify him more as a mass murderer. But I like to refer to him as Speck of Shit. He is a horrible, horrible person. Although he was portrayed very well on a show that we like. It's actually two shows. American Horror Story, he was on, they portrayed, hit that character. It was the Murder House.
Did they have him in that?
Mm-hmm. It was the Murder House season. And then, Mindhunter. Yeah, Mindhunter.
I don't remember him in that.
Yeah, they went to speak with him. But he was born Richard Benjamin Speck. He was born in Kirkwood, Illinois. He had 7 other siblings. They had moved to Monmouth, Illinois, shortly after Richard was born. Speck's oldest brother, Robert, died at age 23 in an automobile accident. Speck's father worked as a packer at Western Stoneware in Monmouth and previously worked as a farmer and logger. Speck was very close with his father, who had died in 1947 from a heart attack, and at the age of 53, Speck was 6 years old at the time.
Yeah, him and his younger sister, and she was born in 43, they were much younger than the rest of them.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I don't know if they're just trying to allude to what made him do what he did, but I just think he's a terrible piece of shit, to be quite honest. And he was portrayed very well in the show Mindhunter. A few years later, though, Speck's religious mother fell in love with a traveling insurance salesman from Texas.
As you're wont to do.
Right. And she met this guy on a train trip when she was going to Chicago. I guess he was a hard drinker. With a 25-year-old criminal record that started with forgery, included several arrests for driving drunk. He was pretty much the polar opposite of Speck's father. He was a hardworking, upstanding guy.
And sober.
Well, this guy seemed to get by on, you know, forgery and fraud, drinker. Obviously didn't give a fuck about being an example. He was probably just looking at Speck's mom as a piece of pussy. He's probably only that what he was looking at.
Sweet baby Jesus, I cannot believe you just said that.
I did. But to get, we just wanted to get you some history. So between 1951 and 1966, they were in Dallas.
Wait a minute. Did she marry the guy? Did they stay together? What happened?
They married on May 10th, 1950. Sorry, I didn't know if you were referring to Richard or her. I was like, I didn't even get to that yet. Speck and his younger sister, Carolyn, stayed with their married sister, Sarah Thornton, in Monmouth for a few months so Speck could finish second grade. Apparently, too, they've alluded to, he had somewhat of a developmental delay. You've seen that in a couple articles. He was smart enough to do what he did, though, and
he might have been smart enough to make people think he had a developmental delay.
Right. Before joining their mother, Lindbergh, in rural Santo, Texas, which was 40 miles west of Fort Worth, this is where Speck attended third grade. So now, moving on, Dallas, 1951 to 1966.
After a year in Santo, Speck moved with his mother, stepfather, and sister, Caroline, to the East Dallas section of Dallas, Texas. Carolyn?
Carolyn.
No, it's...
Lynn. Line would be L-I-N-E. It's Carolyn.
It could be spelled that way, too. We ain't doing this, all right? We're not going to start this already.
I'm not starting it. I'm just trying to help you with your delay. Go ahead.
I'm going to punch you in the dick. Living at 10 addresses in 4 neighborhoods over the next dozen years. Could you imagine that? You'd be moving.
You never get settled. You never get in a routine. You never meet friends. You don't get to be a kid.
I mean, you'd be moving almost once a year. Speck loathed his often drunk and frequently absent stepfather, who psychologically abused him with insults and threats. It's a great role model for your kid.
Well, it says here he's often drunk, absentee,
yeah,
stepfather.
So.
I don't know. And to be fair, Richard was a poor student who needed glasses for reading but refused to wear them. He struggled through school from 4th to 8th grade. He had to apparently repeat the 8th grade. He refused to speak in class because of he had a fear of people staring at him.
And that's why he had to repeat.
Right.
That's part of why he had to repeat.
I guess he did finally get to 9th grade, but failed every subject and did not return for the second semester. So he dropped out of school after his 16th birthday.
Well, honestly, in the late, in the 40s and 50s and even in the 60s, it wasn't unheard of for kids to drop out of school at that age.
No, but usually there was a plan. Usually they were working, or they were going to the military, or there was something. There was a reason why. And most didn't drop out just because they were failing. They dropped out because they wanted to do something else. We don't advocate dropping out of school, by the way. The weird thing is that Richard actually started drinking alcohol at age 12. By age 15, he was drunk almost every day.
Okay, but to be fair, it's not surprising considering the fact that's the environment he's growing up in.
Well, and then he became somewhat of a regular with the cops. So he, at age 13, he was arrested for trespassing. And then he had a lot of other arrests. They were mostly misdemeanors.
Over the next 8 years?
Yeah.
Speck worked as a laborer for the 7-Up Bottling Company in Dallas for almost 3 years, from 1960 to 63. In October of 61, Speck met 15-year-old Shirley Annette Malone at the Texas State Fair. She then became pregnant after 3 weeks of dating him. And how the hell old was he at this time? 16? 17?
Yeah, looks like it.
Wow. Shirley married Speck on January 19th of 1962, and they moved in, and then she moved in with him, his mother, his sister, and his sister's husband. Jesus. Speck's mother and stepfather had separated, and his stepfather had moved to California. Speck stopped using the name Richard Benjamin Lindbergh when he got married and began using the name Richard Benjamin Speck. When their daughter, Robbie Lynn Speck, was born on July 5th, 1962, Malone did not know that Speck was serving a 22-day jail sentence for disturbing the peace in McKinney, Texas, after a drunken fight.
Something you might want to disclose.
One would think. I mean, where'd she think he was for 22 days?
Hey, Richard, he just, I don't know, he disappears from time to time. I don't really question it, though. He likes the drinky.
I mean, if you...
Like, hey, where you been at, motherfucker? 22 days? Where you been?
I mean, if you're not around for 22 days, I'm going to notice.
Yeah, like, have you seen Richard? It's going on the 22nd day.
Nobody's seen him.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, in July of 1963, Speck was caught after he forged and cashed a co-worker's $44 paycheck. Can I just say he's turning into his stepdad, who he was the polar opposite of his father.
And who he hated.
Yes.
But he's turning
into this guy.
Yeah. Drunk, forged.
He also robbed a grocery store, making away with cigarettes, beer, and $3 in cash.
Well, holy hell.
Jesus Christ.
That's well worth it.
It's time to stop working. Wait a minute.
Well, I mean, he forged and cashed a $44 check. I mean, in 1963, how much is that?
I don't know. But at 21 years old, he was convicted of forgery and burglary and sentenced to 3 years in prison. He was paroled after serving 16 months, from 63 to 65. 1 week after his parole, though, Speck was wielding a 17-inch carving knife when he attacked a woman in a parking lot of her apartment building. He fled when the woman screamed. The police arrived within minutes. They took him into custody. He was given a 16-month sentence to run concurrently with parole violation sentence and returned to prison in Huntsville. But due to an error, he was released 6 months later on completion of his parole violation sentence. I tell you what, I mean, we got to be smarter than the criminals. You have to be, if you want it to stick, you have to be smarter than the criminals.
Like, I know, but think of how many people get released because of errors.
Is there a file? I know they didn't have computers, but is there a file with paperwork that you keep it all in and then it's just one person's job to say, hey, that file is complete? It sounds like there's nobody keeping control of the files.
Well, and they could also get released because something didn't get typed in correctly. I mean, it could have been any number of things that messed it up and he got released.
And of course, he's not going to go, wait a minute now, hold on.
That's not right.
That's not right now. I was supposed to do concurrent with the... So that would have made, what, 24, 22 months, something like that?
Oh, yeah, he ain't going to say shit.
No, he wants to go out and forge, rob, and, I don't know, hold up women with knives, I guess. But after his release from prison, Speck worked for 3 months as a driver for the Patterson Meat Company. He had 6 accidents with his truck before he was fired for failing to show up for work.
That's okay. The 6 accidents he got into, that's not what got him fired. It was the not showing up for work one day that did it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like he was drinky. It doesn't say that, but given his history, that's what it sounds like.
Because you're typically going to get into an accident if you're sober.
Right.
Unless it's not your fault. Because you can't control what people around you are doing. But I would say 6 accidents, it's looking more and more like it's his fault.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So, in December of 1965, his mother recommended that Richard, who was then legally separated from Malone, moved in with a 29-year-old divorced woman, an ex-professional wrestler who was a bartender at his favorite bar, Ginny's Lounge. And she needed someone to get this, to babysit her 3 children. Richard is a perfect babysitter.
Yeah. Who doesn't think of letting a drunk babysit their kids?
He has a knife.
Well,
now, it's not to hurt people. It is just more of a prop.
To be fair, she's a professional wrestler, so she may have thought she could kick his ass.
Who is this, China? Come on. Jesus Christ, would she work for GLOW? Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling?
Is that what that stood for?
That's what that stood for. I used to watch it a lot. Masturbated to it once or twice.
Because there was a TV show on Netflix about it.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I didn't know that was a real thing. I thought it was just a...
And then kind of like American Gladiators was kind of then born out of that. So in 1966, Malone filed for divorce. Speck had actually stabbed a man in a knife fight at Ginny's Lounge.
Ginny's.
Is it Ginny's?
Ginny's. Ginny is money.
So Ginny... Wait a minute, hold on. So Ginny, they're spelling it with a G?
Yes.
So is that like Jif Gif?
Jeff can be spelled with a
Jif,
G too.
Jif Gif.
I'm telling you that Jif, your name can Jif, be spelled with a G too.
Jif Gif.
We're not doing this. We're not doing the Jif Gif thing. I'm not, because you're not going to drive me
like
up a wall.
It's like Ginny Ginny.
It's Ginny.
Are you? It's Ginny.
It's Ginny.
Ginny?
Just because it's got a G does not mean it's Ginny. It's Ginny.
So it's Ginny.
Oh my God.
Okay. He was charged with aggravated assault. But his lawyer, that was hired by his mother, was able to get his charge reduced to disturbing the peace. How do you go from stabbing a person to, he was just disturbing the peace. He was disturbing the bowels of the man that he stabbed. He was disturbing the life.
I don't know.
Of the man that he stabbed at Ginny's Lounge.
I'm going to stab you with my pen. It's Ginny.
He was fined $10 and only jailed for 3 days.
Well, why not?
He failed to pay the fine.
Well, you know, he can't get that $10 because when he robbed a grocery store, he only got three.
And here's where the police fucked up. They fuck up all the time. The justice system fucks up. He was never in custody again in Dallas. Which means they could have had him right there and probably...
saved eight people's lives.
Right.
And a raping that he did. On March 5th of 66, Speck bought a 12-year-old car. How? If he didn't have the $10 to pay the fine, how'd he buy a car?
He needed to save it for the car.
The following evening, he robbed a grocery store, stole 70 cartons of cigarettes, sold them out of the trunk of his car in the grocery store's parking lot.
You can say what you want, but this man's resourceful.
And then he abandoned the car that he just bought.
Resourceful, but not smart.
The police traced the car to Speck and issued a warrant for his arrest for burglary on March 8th. An arrest, which would have been his 42nd in Dallas, would meet another prison term. So on March 9th of 66, Speck's sister Carolyn drove him to the Dallas bus depot where he took a bus to Chicago, Illinois.
Ooh, we're getting closer to his finale.
42 arrests. You would think.
Like, at what point do you say...
his ass needs to just stay here.
Okay, there's a couple things you need to consider, right? I think you do some soul searching and you say, I'm not good at this. I've been caught 42 times.
Well, no, 41. This one would have been his 42nd.
Correct. Yeah. Does one really make that big of a fucking difference?
Really, no.
Okay, 41. I'm not good at this particular thing.
No, I think I need to find a new thing to do.
I need to find a new thing to do. Maybe the babysitting, I should have gave it a couple more days. It probably would have worked out. The other thing is, how the fuck do you not look at this guy as a judge and say, you've been arrested 41 times? Maybe you should just stay. Maybe you don't need to get out. Maybe this is where you need to be.
I would think.
Because you're not good at being a criminal, I can tell you that. I've caught you 41 times.
Okay? Jesus.
I mean, at what point then do you say, they're responsible? The justice system, the cops, they're responsible.
I would say by, you know, I would say way before the 41
arrest.
There's
not one sane motherfucker that would have looked at him and said, yeah, I think he's going to make it on the 42nd. I think we let him out on this 41st one, he's going to be fine. The other 40, kind of a fluke. This last one, though, it got him. I think he's changed. He's going to make art. He's going to make candles. He's going to hold group. He'll be fine. No. God, he turns into a bigger monster. You know what he did every time he went to prison?
He learned how to do something else.
He learned how to be a bigger monster.
Yeah.
Okay.
Speck then stayed with his sister Martha Thornton and her family in Chicago for a few days. He then returned to his boyhood hometown of Monmouth, Illinois, where he initially stayed.
Monmouth.
That's what I said.
Monmouth.
That's what I said.
Monmouth.
I'm not doing this. Where he initially stayed with some old family friends. Speck's brother Howard was a carpenter in Monmouth and found a job for him sanding plasterboard for another carpenter.
Hold on. Say it with me. Monmouth.
Do you want a pin in the eye?
Say it with me.
Do you want a pin in your eye?
If you say it right. Monmouth.
I've said it right.
Say it with me.
I'm not doing this. You need to quit making fun how I talk. Speck then became angry when he learned his ex-wife had remarried 2 days after she was granted a divorce on March 16th of 1966.
Well, he wasn't there to be fucking her, so what the hell? I mean, that's what she's fucking somebody else, obviously, because...
Well, Jesus Christ, he's never fucking home. How could he be if he's been arrested 41 times?
Right. ID the motherfucker when you walk in.
Who are you? He moved to the Christie Hotel in downtown Monmouth on March 25th and spent most of his time in downtown taverns.
So he found him another Guinness.
Surprise. Oh. At the end of March, while Speck and some acquaintances were on a bar hopping trip to Gulfport, Illinois, they were detained overnight by police there after Speck reportedly threatened a man in a tavern restroom with his knife.
Jesus Christ. Do these fucking police people not talk to each other? Hey,
not in the 60s.
Hey, Texas.
How do you think Bundy got away with the multi-state?
I know, I'm just saying.
Back okay. then that you didn't talk. I mean, you didn't talk. Even if you're in the same state and you're going county to county, I don't even think the counties talk to each other.
Is that what you discovered when you time traveled? You don't know. They could have. They could have had some sort of
really? Is that why he was arrested and released 41 times?
Because they're stupid. Fucking after the fifth time, let's just go ahead and put the bullet in your head.
Good
Lord. On March 3rd...
You mean April 3rd.
Yep. Mrs. Virgil Harris, who is a 65-year-old resident of Monmouth, returned home at 1 a.m. to find a burglar in her house, and he had a knife. Who could this be? He seems to like the knifey, right?
He does seem to be partial to knives.
He was described as 6 foot tall, white, very polite, spoke very soft. The man then...
He had a southern drawl. Don't forget that part.
Oh, southern drawl.
Because that's going to...
That's going to be...
significant because he's in the north.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, and that'd be something that very identifiable. The man then blindfolded her, tied her up, raped her, ransacked the house, and stole the $2.50 she had earned babysitting that evening. That motherfucker.
How disgusting is that? A 65-year-old woman. She's a grandma.
That's gross. He's gross. Fuck. Jesus Christ. And took her fucking money on top of that. $2.50. You need a union. $2.50.
Well, it's in the 60s.
Alright, she needs a union.
Babysitters didn't get paid that much.
A week later, a Mary Catherine Pierce, a 32-year-old barmaid who worked for her brother-in-law at a tavern. It was called Frank's Place. I think Frank was related to Guinea. Anyway, this was in downtown Monmouth. At last seen leaving the tavern at 12:20 a.m. on April 9th, she was then reported missing on April 13th. Her body was found that day in an empty hog house behind a tavern. She had died from a blow to her abdomen that ruptured her liver.
He probably dumped her in the hog house so the hogs would eat her.
You know, here's the thing, though. He's escalating. Escalating.
Like, how hard do you have to hit somebody in the abdomen to kill him?
I would assume pretty fucking hard. I mean, it depends on how fat she was. I mean, if you're a fatty, you got some protection, but I would assume that it would have to be significant. I don't think he could actually do it with his hand. He probably hit her with something, like a blunt object. Or a baseball bat or a bar or something.
2x4 or something.
But, really, you don't have to be a fucking genius to see that he's escalating his behavior. Now, because you say they don't talk, they can't put the puzzle together. But there was a puzzle that was partially put together in Texas from 41 fucking arrests.
Well, those weren't, like, I think only one or two of those were violent arrests. The rest of them were like...
How many do you need?
Well, the thing is that a lot of them were burglaries.
Okay. How many
But do you need? Can see him escalating because then the knife comes in.
Well, hindsight's always 20/20, I guess. Speck had frequented Frank's Place. And the empty hog house was one of the several he had helped build. So he knew about it, he had knowledge of it, and he knew intimately about
it. So why is it called a hog house if there ain't no hogs in it? Because I would have thought he put her in there so hogs could eat her. Because pigs eat everything.
The Monmouth police briefly questioned him about Pierce's death when he showed up to collect his final carpentry paycheck on April 15th. They asked him to stay in town for some further questioning. But when police showed up at Christie Hotel on the 19th of April, they discovered that he had left the hotel a few hours earlier. He was spotted carrying his suitcases and saying he was just going to the laundromat with the suitcases. He had instead had left town in search of a room. His room turned up a radio and costume jewelry from Miss Virgil Harris, who had been reported missing from her house, as well as other reported items in the two local burglaries in the past month.
Okay, wait a minute. So... Oh, okay, never mind. Mrs. Harris wasn't missing from her house. She reported the jewelry missing from her house.
Correct.
Okay, so are they saying that he killed that chick?
It was because he was a person of interest. Probably wanted to know where he had gotten.
Well, if he didn't kill her, why'd he run away?
I don't know. That's Richard.
Well, what I'm saying is he didn't get, like, he's not, I don't think that that's a, because if that's the case, he would be a serial killer, not a mass murderer.
I don't see in here where they attributed that murder to him. Now, that may come later. That may come later.
He's just a person of interest.
Correct. You don't want to, you know, blow your load.
Wow.
Yeah, we're just giving facts right now.
On April 19th of 66, Speck returned to stay at his sister's, Martha's second floor apartment at 3966 North Avondale Avenue. Why the hell they gotta add the address? In an old Irving Park neighborhood on the northwest side of Chicago, where she lived with her husband, Gene Thornton, and their two teenage daughters. Just right off jump, I ain't letting this motherfucker near my kids. I don't care if he's their uncle. Just look at him.
Yeah.
He's creepy.
Absolutely, he's creepy.
Martha had worked as a registered nurse in the pediatrics before she was married, and her husband Gene worked nights as a railroad switchman, whatever that is.
That's where they switch the tracks. Like, they throw the switch and it moves the tracks depending on where the trains need to go.
Okay.
It's
a Speck told them an unbelievable story about having to leave Monmouth after refusing to sell narcotics for a crime syndicate there, and they believed that.
So he was working for the hand or the foot. Okay.
Really? We're going to go Daredevil and then Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, he's the one telling the big story.
I was that even a thing in 63? Was Daredevil around in 63? I can't remember. We just did a podcast on that.
We're going to make it a thing.
Gene Thornton, who had served in the U.S. Navy, thought that the U.S. Merchant Marine might provide a suitable occupation for his unemployed brother-in-law. So on April 25th, he took Speck to the U.S. Coast Guard office to apply for a letter of authority to work as an apprentice seaman. I knew that was going to happen. The application required being fingerprinted and photographed and having a physical examination by a doctor. Okay, so even if you fingerprint him, it's not going to come up on anything because they don't have databases yet.
No, and if you throw semen at me, I'm not taking the job.
But it's okay for you to throw semen at me.
Yeah, why not?
Speck found work immediately after obtaining the letter of authority, joining the 33-member crew of Inland Steel's Clarence B. Randall, an L6 SB1 class bulk ore lake freighter on April 30th. His first voyage on the Clarence B. Randall was brief since he was stricken with appendicitis on May 3rd and was evacuated by U.S. Coast Guard helicopter to St. Joseph's Hospital in Hancock, Michigan. On the, what is that?
Appendectomy?
No, not the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, where he had an emergency appendectomy.
Right. After he was discharged from the hospital, though, Speck did return to stay with his sister in Chicago so he could just relax and maybe recuperate a little bit, try to build his strength up so he could kill more people. On May 20th, he rejoined the crew of the Clarence B. Randall, which, because he was a seaman, he often got drunk, and he ended up quarreling or fighting, arguing with one of the boat officers. He was then put ashore on June 15th for a week. He stayed at the St. Elmo on the east side of Chicago's Flophouse. Let's see. Speck then traveled by train to Houghton, Michigan, staying at the Douglas House to visit Judy Lackett.
Good luck.
Like an Emmy?
That's what I would have guessed at.
28-year-old. She was a 28-year-old nursing aide. She was going through a divorce. He had befriended her at St. Joseph's Hospital on June 27th after Judy gave him $80 to help him until he found work. Speck left again to stay with his sister in Chicago for the next 2 weeks.
What a guy.
On June 30th, Speck's brother-in-law, Gene, drove him to the National Maritime Union Hiring Hall. This was in South Deering, Chicago. This way he could file his paperwork for his seaman card.
You guys have to carry cards for that?
It's called a man card. I guess it was a seaman card back then. The National Marine Union Hiring Hall was one block east of five attached two-story brick townhouses, three of which were occupied by South Chicago Community Hospital senior student nurses and Filipino exchange registered nurses. Eight of these nurses lived in the eastmost townhouse. It was like 150 feet from the National Maritime Union Hiring Hall. Yeah.
On Friday, July 8th of 1966, Speck's brother-in-law, Gene, drove him to the National Marine Union Hiring Hall to pick up his seaman's card and registered for a berth on a ship.
No, you gotta have seaman to have the berth.
Wow. Speck lost out that day to a seaman with more seniority for a berth on the
Seaman.
Just wait. Okay. Seaman. With more seniority for a berth on the SS Flying Spray.
Oh, shit. Bukkake. Bukkake. Someone's getting the cum party.
And then this was a C-1A cargo ship bound for South Vietnam. I guess in 66, that's when the war was going on, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Around and then?
Maybe.
And returned to his sister Martha's house for the weekend.
Apartment.
That's... whatever. On Monday, July 11th, Speck had outstayed his welcome with his sister Martha and her family.
So weird. Because Richard is so well behaved.
Right.
He has goals. He's driven.
I mean, the brother-in-law tried to help, but he just wasn't doing it. After packing his bags and again being driven by his brother-in-law to the National Marine Union Hiring Hall to await a berth on a ship, Speck stayed the night at Pauline's rooming house about 1 mile away in the Vets Park neighborhood of South Deering, Chicago. On Tuesday, July 12th, Speck returned to the National Marine Union Hiring Hall. In mid-afternoon, he received an assignment on Sinclair Oil's tanker, SS Sinclair Great Lakes, which was a 30-minute drive away in East Chicago, Indiana. When he arrived there, he found that his spot had already been taken, and he was driven back
to the hiring hall.
To the hiring hall, which was then closed. Speck did not have enough money for a rooming house, so he dropped his bags off six blocks east of the Minor Shell filling station and slept in an unfinished house just off East 103rd Street.
On the 13th of July, Speck picked up his bags, checked in at the hiring hall. He was angry for being sent to a non-existent assignment, and he talked for 30 minutes in a car with his sister Martha and husband Gene, who had driven down to visit him at 9 a.m. Doesn't look like they abandoned him or anything.
They just didn't want him staying with him anymore.
Right. So they parked on East 100th Street next to the Luella Elementary School.
Seems smart.
Yeah. That was across the street from the townhouses where the nurses lived. At 10:30 a.m., he was tired of waiting at the hiring hall for a job. He had $25 that his sister had just given him. He left and walked about a mile and a half and checked in at the Shipyard Inn. The inn was on the east side Chicago rooming house. Speck spent the rest of the day drinking in a nearby tavern before he accosted Ella Mae Hopper at knife point. And there's the knife again. She was a 53-year-old woman who had spent the day drinking at the same taverns that Speck had been at. And he told her his room at the shipyard. He took her to his room at the shipyard, raped her, and stole her black $16 mail order .22 caliber pistol. After dinner at a nearby Kay's pilot house, Speck returned to drink at the shipyard until about 10:20 p.m. When he left, he dressed entirely in black, armed with a switchblade and the handgun that he had just stolen. He walked about a mile and a half west on East 100th Street to the nurse's townhouse. What could he be doing? Why is Richard all in black? Why does he have a knife?
And a gun.
And a gun. And he's drunk. I wonder what Richard could be doing.
So, at 11 p.m. on July
13th... He's looking for Pokemon! Pokemon Go!
Cell phones aren't invented yet. Speck broke into 2319 East 100th Street townhouse in Chicago's Jeffrey Manor neighborhood. The townhouse was functioning as a dormitory for student nurses. He entered and, using only a knife, killed Gloria Davey, Patricia... How do you say that last name?
I'm going to be honest, I lost my place. Patricia Matusik.
That works. Nina Joe...
Shemale. Oh, Shemale. Shemale.
Oh, my God. Pamela Wilkling. Suzanne Ferris. Mary Ann Jordan. Merlerta.
Gargulio.
And Valentino...
Pesson.
Speck, who later claimed he was both...
Guinea!
It's not... Oh, my God. Speck, who later claimed he was both drunk and high on drugs...
Monmouth.
We're out of there.
Monmouth.
We're away from there. We're in Chicago right now.
Monmouth.
Chicago.
Monmouth.
I ain't doing this with you. Let's see. He claimed he was both drunk and high. Where am I at?
So,
may have originally planned to commit a routine burglary.
Because, to be fair, he had committed that in the past. Burglary, stuff like that. So.
And since he killed all those people one time, that's why he's a mass murderer, right?
Yeah.
It says he held the gun, or held the women in a room for hours, leading them out one by one, stabbing or strangling each to death. Then finally raping and strangling his last victim, Gloria Davey. One woman,
Corazon Amoro,
escaped death because she crawled and hid under a bed while Speck was out of the room. Speck possibly lost count or might have known eight women lived in the townhouse, but was unaware that a ninth woman was spending the night. She stayed hidden until almost 6 a.m. Smart woman.
Very smart woman. And Jesus Christ, the only one that was able to take this motherfucker down. How many more people would he have killed? Because he obviously was building up to it.
My question is, when you're in that big of a group, why did more people try to hide under the bed?
That's what I'm saying. There's fucking nine of you and you can't overpower his ass? There's nine of you.
And he's got a 22 back then. That would have only been, five or six bullets?
I'm just saying, man. I mean,
and if he's drunk and high, his aim ain't going to be that great. Because he didn't shoot anybody. He stabbed and strangled.
That was his thing. See, that's why I think... They call him mass murder, but I really think that he got some sort of sexual pleasure from the stabbing. And that... Because the knife was that... That's always a thing with him. Is the knife.
Is a knife.
I think that he got some sort of pleasure from that. 2 days after the murder, Speck was identified by a drifter named Claude Lunsford.
Because his fingerprints were all over the place.
And they were matched to him, obviously. Speck, Lunsford, and another man had been drinking the evening of July 15th on the fire escape of the Star Hotel, because that is what one does.
Exactly.
Is drink on the fire escape.
Well, I mean, that's what they did.
And spit off the side.
Wow.
Lunsford recognized a sketch of the murderer in the evening paper and phoned the police at 9:30 after finding Speck in his, which is Lunsford's, room at the Star Hotel. The police, however, did not respond to the call, although their records show the call had been made. What the fuck are they doing?
Wow.
What are they doing? Not Richard.
Jesus Christ.
Are you kidding me? Motherfucker. Speck then attempted suicide at the Star Hotel. The desk clerk then called the emergency services around midnight.
Did they call him? Did they answer?
Yes. And he was taken to Cook County Hospital at 12:30 a.m. on the 17th. He was recognized by Dr. Leroy Smith, the surgical resident who attended to his wounds. He had read about the Born to Raise Hell tattoo in the newspaper story. The police were then called. Speck was arrested. Concerns over a recent Miranda case that had vacated the convictions of a number of criminals meant Speck was not even questioned for 3 weeks after his arrest.
Wait.
I think
wow.
that they did a great job. Whatever.
Felony court judge Herbert J. Pushkin?
Pashkin.
Appointed
Monmouth.
And I am going to hit you. Appointed an impartial panel to report on Speck's competence to stand trial and his sanity at the time of the crime. A panel of three physicians suggested by the defense and three physicians selected by the prosecution, consisting of five psychologists and one general surgeon. The panel's confidential report deemed Speck competent to stand trial and concluded he had not been insane at the time of the murders.
The surgeon is the out man here. He's like, well, I don't know about all this. I just fix wounds. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know.
Whatever you guys think. Are we getting pizza?
While he was awaiting trial, he participated in twice weekly sessions with part-time Cook County Jail psychologist Dr. Marvin... What?
Hey, I don't want to be this guy. Psychiatrist. There's a difference. Martin Zipporin.
These continued after Speck's transfer from Sir Mark Memorial Hospital inside Chicago's House of Corrections.
Hey, I don't want to be this guy. It's Siermack.
You want to be stabbed. On July 29th of 66 until February 13th of 67, the day before Speck was transferred
to Peoria
to stand trial,
Zipporin
prepared a discharge summary with depression, anxiety, guilt, and shame among Speck's emotions, but also a deep love for his family. It went on to note an obsessive compulsive personality and a Madonna prostitute attitude towards women. He maintained Speck viewed women as saintly until he felt betrayed by them for some reason, after which hostility would develop. He was also diagnosed with organic brain syndrome, resulting from the cerebral injuries suffered
earlier in Speck's life.
And stated he was competent to stand trial, but was insane at the time of the crime due to the effects of alcohol and drug use on his organic brain syndrome.
Dr. Zipporin did not testify for the defense or the prosecution, as both sides were troubled to learn before the trial that Zipporin was writing a book about Speck for financial gain. Never happens, Amityville.
Well, everything. I mean, come right on.
Zipporin also earned the ear of Cook County Jail, which fired him as its part-time psychiatrist the week after Speck's trial ended. At some point during the interviews, though, with Speck, he obtained a written three-sentence consent from Speck, authorizing him to tell what I am really like. That's Zipporin's biography of Speck, and it was published in the summer of 67.
It probably didn't do well.
No. Speck did later claim, though, he had no recollection of the murders, but had confessed the crime of Dr. Lee. He had confessed the crime to Dr. Leroy Smith of the Cook County Hospital. Smith did not testify because the confession was made while Speck was sedated.
So he could have just been talking out of his ass.
Yeah, yeah. Illinois Supreme Court Justice Stamos, Cook County's state attorney, when Speck was tried, who knew of the hospital confession, stated, "We didn't need it. We had an eyewitness. Speck confessed to the murders for the first time in public when he spoke to the Chicago Tribune in 78. In a film inmates made at Stateville Correctional Center in 88, Speck recounted the brutal murders in detail. He again stated that he was high that night, but then he undercut the idea of drugs were a mitigating factor, asserting that he could just as well have done it sober."
Well, how high and drunk could you have really been if you can recount in detail the murders in 88 when it happened in, what, 66, 67?
Well, he probably had to relive it. That's what he jerked off to.
What I'm saying is you can't say you were drunk and high and don't remember doing it, but then in fucking 88, you recount everything in detail?
I mean, I'm just saying, he probably relived those details. That's why I think he's more of a serial killer.
And he got the mass murderer thing because he killed all those people at one time. Speck's jury trial began in April of 67, 3 hours southwest of Chicago, with a gag order on the press. In court, Speck was positively identified by the sole surviving student nurse when she was asked if she could identify the killer of her fellow student. She rose from her seat in the witness box, walked directly in front of Speck, and pointed a finger at him, nearly touching him, and said, "This is the man." Lieutenant Emeril Geese,
that's close, yeah,
testified regarding the fingerprints that were matched. On April 15th, after 49 minutes of deliberation.
Holy fuck. 49 minutes.
49 minutes.
If you are the person waiting for the jury to deliberate and it's 49 minutes, you're like, I'm gonna die.
I'm done.
49 minutes, that means they really hate me.
Yeah, I'm done. I mean, because
49 minutes. I need another trial.
He was found guilty and recommended the death penalty. On
49 minutes. Nobody's objecting to this. I need a new attorney.
On June 5th, the judge sentenced Speck to die in the electric chair, but granted an immediate stay pending automatic appeal. The Illinois Supreme Court subsequently upheld his conviction and death sentence on November 26th of 68. What's this XYY syndrome, man?
So, in December of 65 and March of 66, Nature and The Lancet published findings on by a British cytogeneticist, Patricia Jacobs and her colleagues, of a chromosome survey of patients at Scotland's only security hospital for the developmentally disabled. 9 of the patients, ranging from 5'7" to 6'2", were found to have an extra Y chromosome, creating the XYY syndrome. The hypothesis was that men with this XYY syndrome were more prone to aggressive and violent behavior than males with the normal XY. That was
so
later.
The extra Y makes you more hormonal?
I don't know, but it was later discredited and found to be bullshit. Bullshit. He's just a really, really bad fucking person. In August of 66, an endocrinologist and geneticist at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee, wrote to Speck's attorney, which was a public defender, who was also reportedly planning an insane defense. He suggested that based off of Jacob's unsubstantiated theory of, you know, Speck's height, which was 6'1", that Speck might have this XYY syndrome. A chromosome analysis performed the following by the Engel revealed that Speck actually was a normal XY. 1 month later, a court-appointed panel of 6 physicians rejected this insanity argument. In 68, a biochemist, basically, looking at this, subjects confined in a psychiatric hospital or penal institutions in Pennsylvania, of the 5 XYY patients identified, 4 exhibited moderate to severe facial acne, leading to the group to suggest that acne be added to the list defining the XYY characteristics. This also failed. The research failed, and basically the observation was bullshit.
So basically bullshit. They're just saying if you are tall and have a lot of acne, you've got the extra Y chromosome.
And I can see why you'd be prone to some sort of aggressive behavior because, hey, beanpole, pizza face. You know, I mean, to me, and it's really, it's like a wide berth. Anybody from 5'7 to 6'2 or whatever.
Yep. I mean, so is there actually people with the extra Y chromosome?
There are, but they're trying to say that these people had this aggressive behavior and it's not true. That's not where that aggressive behavior comes from. It comes from your brain.
Right.
That's where that behavior comes from.
Jesus, so they're just trying to lump all these tall motherfuckers in with these crazy motherfuckers, and they're saying, because you're tall, you're
watch
crazy.
Watch out for the tall acne people. Whatever.
It's kind of messed up.
It is kind of messed up. I guess in a three-part series on the XYY syndrome in 68, the New York Times presented Jacob's unsubstantiated theory associating the syndrome with violent behavior as an established fact and noted that the karyotype had been cited as a mitigating factor by attorneys defending the XYY man charged with murder in Paris. Another in Melbourne is also identified Speck as a classic example of XYY criminal and citing Telfer and Getty as the sources predicted that the XYY syndrome would from the crux of his insanity defense. So here's the thing though, they had already tested him and he was XY. So automatically
he's out of the running for that XYY.
Bullshit. He's just a bad fucking person.
So they're just trying to take
when
him.
At what point do we as a society say that's just a bad fucking person?
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to take their theory and to show that it's true,
right.
And they're using him as the example and saying that just because he has the XY, they're saying, oh, no, he's got the XYY.
Well, so they tested him again. And who do you think's flipping the bill for this shit? So they tested him again, and again, he came out, he was a normal XY.
Right.
Genome. After Speck's conviction and death sentence were upheld by the Illinois Supreme Court later that year, and then appeals moved to the federal court system, articles continued to appear that lay press reporting or implying that Speck's supposed XYY genotype would be invoked as a mitigating factor. Basically, it went nowhere. I mean, they tried this, and they tried this with the XYY bullshit.
Looks like they tried it for a couple years.
They did. But in the end, it was...
It's because he was found sane, and he was tested multiple times, and he only has the XY chromosomes.
However, his death penalty was reversed. On June 28th, 71, the U.S. Supreme Court, because they're great, upheld Speck's conviction, but reversed the death sentence because more than 250 potential jurors were unconstitutionally excluded from his jury because of their conscientious and religious beliefs against capital punishment. The case was remanded back to Illinois Supreme Court for resentencing. In 72, the U.S. Supreme Court declared the death penalty unconstitutional, so the Illinois Supreme Court, their only option was to order Speck re-sentenced to prison by the original Cook County Court. In 72, Judge Richard Fitzgerald resentenced Speck to from 400 to 1,200 years in prison. 8 consecutive sentences of 50 to 150 years. He was denied parole in 7 minutes at his first parole hearing, and then denied on 6 subsequent hearings, with the last being in 1990.
Yeah, they weren't letting his ass out.
Right.
While incarcerated at Stateville Correctional Center in Crestville, Illinois, Speck was given the nickname Birdman after the film Birdman of Alcatraz because he kept a pair of sparrows that had flown into his cell. He was described as a loner who kept a stamp collection and enjoyed listening to music. His contacts were with the warden included requests for new shirts, a radio, and other mundane items. The warden merely described him as a big nothing doing time. Speck was not a model prisoner, big surprise. He was often caught with drugs or distilled moonshine, which they made in the toilets,
right.
Didn't they?
What did they expect? That's why death was probably suitable for this guy.
Punishment for such infractions never stopped him. How am I going to get in trouble? I'm here for 1,200
exactly.
years. What are you going to do to him? He loathed reporters and granted only one press interview in 78 to the Chicago Tribune columnist Bob Green. During that interview, he publicly confessed to the murders for the first time and said he thought he would get out of prison between now and the year 2000, at which time he hoped to run his own grocery store business. Wow. When Green asked him if he compared himself to celebrity killers like John Dillinger, he replied, "Me? I'm not like Dillinger or anybody else. I'm freakish." At least he knew he was a freak. Speck stated that at the time of the killings, he had no feelings, but things had changed. "I had no feelings at all that night. They said there was blood all over the place. I can't remember. It felt like nothing. I'm sorry as hell for those girls and their families and for me. If I had it to do over again, it would be a simple house burglary." Speck's final thought for the American people was, "Just tell them to keep up their hatred for me. I know it keeps up their morale, and I don't know what I'd do without it." Wow. In his book, Mindhunter, Inside the FBI's Elite Serial Crime Unit, John E. Douglas of the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit refers to a telling prison incident Speck revealed to him in an interview. Quote, "He found an injured sparrow that had flown in through one of the broken windows and nursed it back to health. When it was healthy enough to stand, he tied a string around its leg and had it perch on his shoulder. At one point, a guard told him pets weren't allowed. I can't have it, Speck challenged, then walked over to a spinning fan and threw the small bird in. Horrified, the guard said, 'I thought you liked that bird.' 'I did,' Speck replied, 'but if I can't have it, no one can.'"
Well, Jesus Christ, what did the bird do? I mean, that bird was just being a fucking bird. See, well, that's what I'm saying. He's not going to change. So, I guess in 1996, there was a prison video. That came out. So, there somehow, someone's making a video in prison. My first question is, how the fuck you got a video camera in prison? And why is that allowed? But, nevertheless,
it was recorded in 88 and he didn't get it until 96.
Okay, well, that raises even more questions, because it would be harder to get a hold of in 88 than 96. But Chicago television news anchor Bill Curtis received videotapes made at a Statesville Correctional Center in 88. Showing them publicly for the first time before the Illinois state legislature, Curtis pointed out the explicit scene of sex, drug use, and money being passed around by the prisoners, who seemingly had no fear of being caught. In the center was their star, Richard Speck. And apparently he was performing oral sex on other inmates. He was sharing large quantities of cocaine with another inmate, parading around in silk panties, and sporting female-like breasts. Apparently he got these in from hormone treatments that were smuggled in. He also said that if they only knew how much fun I was having, they'd turn me loose. The Illinois legislator packed the auditorium to view the two-hour video because they wanted to see how fucking dumb they are.
But stopped.
Stopped the screening when he started sucking another man's dick.
So basically, they just filmed an orgy?
So I remember seeing this videotape. It was a big thing when it kind of came out.
I remember hearing about this at all.
And I think you can still find it on YouTube. But he's in sunglasses. There's another man there with him. He does have tits.
Well, if it's not on YouTube, you know it's on...
He has a nice rack, I mean, from this hormone treatment. And then he's wearing silk panties. This other person's wearing silk panties. They are doing cocaine. I think they're both wearing sunglasses. And then at some point, yeah, he is talking and he does say that. And he goes down and he starts sucking this other guy's dick. And it says, from behind the camera, a prisoner asked Speck if he had killed the nurses, and Speck responded, "Sure I did." When asked why, Speck shrugged and jokingly said, "Just wasn't their night." Asked how he felt about himself in the years since, and he said, "Like I always felt, I had no feeling. If you're asking me if I felt sorry, no." He described in detail the experience of strangling somebody. "It's not like on TV and it takes over 3 minutes. And you have to have a lot of strength."
Wow. Shortly before December 5th of 91, Speck was transported from Staysville Correctional Center to Silver Cross Hospital in Juliet, Illinois, after complaining of severe chest pains.
Couldn't have been the cocaine.
Yeah, it was probably the cocaine.
It wasn't that. Richard always had a problem with his chest hurting when he sucked dick. I don't know. And we told him, no, Richard, don't suck the dick. But he just kept sucking the dick. I think it was a semen buildup.
That's gross. Speck later died in the early morning hours of December 5th of what was believed to be a heart attack, one day shy of what would have been his 50th birthday. The coroner stated that Speck had an enlarged heart. What is that?
Emphysema.
And clogged arteries, which most likely contributed to his fatal heart attack. Speck's sister feared that his grave would be desecrated, so he does not have a physical resting place. Speck was cremated, and his ashes were scattered in a secret location in the Juliet area.
Okay, so here's my problem with this. Why the fuck did we waste money sending him to the fucking hospital, number one? Why not just let him die the most painful death and watch it and let us videotape it so we can enjoy that? I think that would have been perfect.
My question is how did they get the damn video camera in there to record the orgies? And were there any prison guards in on it?
I would think there would have to be, right? What the fuck else does he got boobs for? What do you need boobs in prison? I'll tell you why you need boobs in prison. So, you ain't getting killed. That's why you need boobs in prison. They ain't gonna kill the only person in there with boobs.
But it's still a guy sucking your dick. And you're still fucking a guy in the ass, tits or not.
Correct. But think about the psychology of it. He has a strong dislike for women, right?
No.
He has a Madonna complex. So he likes them up to the point
that they do something that...
Correct.
Yeah.
So why virtually turn yourself into a woman? He's become everything he's hated. He hated his stepdad. He became his stepdad. He hated women up at a certain point.
Until they did something. Yeah.
So I think this guy has not been truthful about anything at all. I think he's been a serial killer from the word go. This is his thing. He's also one of those people who's a survivor. And he knew how to survive in prison. I mean, you could be the most popular guy in prison.
With boobies?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think? Do you think he was a mass murderer? Or do you think he was a serial killer?
I think he was a serial killer, and then he just got attributed to mass murder because he killed 8 people in one night.
Right.
But yeah, he's a serial killer. And he wouldn't have stopped. He would have kept going. He would have kept killing.
Well, he said it right there. He's antisocial. He said, I don't have any feelings about it. They were just objects.
It was just another day for him.
It was a thrill for him. It was a thrill. Everything he does is for a thrill. I mean, he's a total sicko. And the fact that we said that death penalty was inhumane, what about the nurses that he tortured, raped, and killed?
Right. Well, he only raped one, but he killed 8.
The other ones thought they were going to be raped. Good enough for being raped. Right? If that's in their mind the whole time, this motherfucker's going to rape me. And then what's he going to do to me? You know? I mean, was that humane?
Well, the thing is it could have stopped in Texas if they would have just kept him in jail.
Oh, it's another example of how we just fail. Our justice system fails everybody. And people like this are allowed to go to prison, grow boobs, do cocaine, suck dick.
He had more fun in jail than he had out of jail.
Oh my God, it sounds like he was in paradise. Like, God, if they only knew, they'd let me go because the outside world was so much more worse.
It blows my mind that he was doing all that crap in prison.
And these are the people that we're...
saving.
And protecting. But we couldn't save and protect the nurses that he killed. Nurses. These are people who take care of other people.
Mm-hmm.
They're only there to learn that and you know, contribute to society.
Unlike this waste of space that...
It makes me sick. The way that we're fascinated with them. That's why they're doing all these tests on them. They want to know how their brain works. Why? They're just bad fucking people. They're bad people. Yes, their brain probably works differently. It would have to.
I think they're trying to figure out if they're born that way or if something happens during their childhood that makes them that way. That's the whole nature-nurture thing.
What are you going to do with that knowledge? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to lock young Jimmy up when you notice he's trying to butt fuck the cat and, you know, skinning dogs? Are you gonna lock
probably
him up?
Probably, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, but I mean,
or maybe they
realistically
think
realistically though, are you going to do that? No.
Probably not.
We're weak. Our society is weak. We're soft.
Or, you know, they put him into like a mental hospital, maybe.
Mental hospital so he could learn how to be a better criminal. Absolutely.
Or they think there's maybe a fate.
Because you meet maybe everybody else with their little hang-ups. Yeah. Why not?
Maybe they think if they catch it early enough, they can stop him from becoming a future serial killer.
Oh, put him on a heavy dose of Haldol and Thorazine.
Well, I don't know. You're asking, and I'm telling you what could possibly be why they're doing it. I think it's ridiculous. Just fucking kill him. I don't understand why these people, him is a perfect example, you kill all these people, but you get to keep your life? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I could see, you know, somebody has the, as a young child, has these urges and they have thoughts and they're doing things that, you know, young serial killers would do or young mass murderers would do. And I could see putting him in some sort of an institute and saying, okay, we need to see if we can break them of this. But it's kind of like saying you can break a pedophile from being a pedophile. No, you can't. It's born in them.
It's
ingrained.
There.
It's
there.
Never going away. They may not act on the urge.
But it's there.
But it's there. I think those people need to be monitored as long as they're not acting on that urge. Because we all have urges.
Even acting on the urge is even just looking.
Right.
Anything.
But I can see taking someone like, not a pedophile, but someone like a serial killer or something. Because, to be quite honest, I put pedophiles even below serial killers. But to take someone like that and say, okay, now you're 21 years old. You know, we've worked with you this long. And you determine they still have the urge. Then you put the bullet in their head.
Yeah, because you're saving lives. You're saving lives.
You did the humane thing. You tried. We worked with you.
Because if you let that person out, he's going to kill somebody.
Correct. And time and time again, Ed Kemper, what did he say?
He said, do not let me out. Because if you let me out, I will kill again.
What did Jeffrey Dahmer say? I would have kept going.
Yeah.
What did Ted Bundy say?
Well, he said he didn't do nothing.
No, but when he finally confessed.
Yeah, he said if he would have been out, he would have kept going. They all would have kept going.
They're not going to stop. You could try to intervene early and make it some sort of a sociological experiment.
And you got Gacy, who was a double whammy. He was a pedophile and serial killer.
Right. These people are not going to stop.
They're not.
It's kind of like if you're a woman and you like to have your butthole eaten, you know? I mean, that's an urge. You're not going to stop.
Really?
I'm just saying, you're not going to stop. It's like...
What's that hurting anybody?
Well, it's not. But my point is, it's an urge. You're not going to stop. You're going to act on it. Any chance you get, you're going to act on it. You know, you can say all the Hail Marys and, you know, do whatever. But in the end of the day, if murder is your urge...
You're going to act on it at some point.
You're going to kill an animal. And when that's not good enough, then you're going to step it up.
Because animals are never enough.
You're going to step it up.
They usually start there, but it always goes up.
Well, and the thing with escalation is they continue to try to recreate that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, what you're doing is not working, so now you've got to step it up. And then eventually it gets to where it's like a drug. You'll never experience that high you felt the first time that made you feel and chase that urge.
Yeah, you never will again.
Right. You'll never hit that feeling again. So, I think...
That's when you get your double incidents or your triple incidents in a day because they're trying to... Well, like Bundy, where he took two people from the same area on the same day.
Yeah, and you know, BTK, I guess, was kind of a different type of serial killer in the way that he did have his long lapses.
He had very long lapses.
But he also had something to keep him where he needed to be in those long lapses. Like, he was doing stuff to himself. Mm-hmm. And had built his own fantasy around himself and was able... And in a way, I think he was trying to save lives. He was like, I'll just do this with me. You know, that way I'm not hurting anybody else. But in the end, that urge took over and he had... It's a compulsion. He had to do it. How do you break somebody of that? You don't.
You can't.
You can't break somebody of that. People could disagree with me and that's fine. I don't mind being wrong if I'm wrong.
And there hasn't been a case yet.
Yeah, and this is something that I would love to be wrong about. But my gut feeling tells me this is not something, because we all have our own urges.
The only way to stop it is you catch them early enough and you keep them locked up. That's the only way to stop it.
And is that really how you want that person to live?
I mean,
is that fair to them?
Well, in Kemper's case, yes, it is, because he's perfectly happy sitting in jail.
He is, and you know what? He's actually tried to contribute because he's helped the FBI. Yeah,
well, he's helped the FBI. He would do things with reading the Bible, recording himself reading the Bible for people who wanted to have it that couldn't see.
And we will cover Kemper, but Kemper, not that he's a cuddly teddy bear that you want to get a ride from, but he knows what he is. And he knows that he can't stop, and he knows that...
And to look at him, you would think he's completely harmless. I mean, he's huge.
He's a big nerd.
And even watching Mindhunter, because that's the first time I'd ever heard of him, was watching Mindhunter. You wouldn't be threatened by him.
That was his whole thing, though. But we will do Kemper. We won't, you know, we won't get in. And we'll do BTK, too. I'm fascinated with BTK.
But this... motherfucker, you look at him and you're like, I'm going the other way.
Exactly. And see, the most dangerous predators
are the ones you don't see coming.
The Ted Bundys.
I don't get the Ted Bundy thing, because no, I get the heebie-jeebies.
I'm just saying, though, there was a lot of women that thought he was just very charming.
And attractive. I just don't get... I see him coming at me.
I think his attractiveness...
I'm going the other way.
I think his attractiveness came from his charm. Mm. They were more attracted to his charm than his actual looks. I think with Ed Kemper, the thing was is that you seen him as that big teddy bear.
Yeah, he just looks harmless.
And then before you know it, you're handcuffed in that trunk and he's, you know, killing you.
Right. Unless you talk about what's happening and then he lets you go.
Right. So, I'm going based off of what past serial killers had said, and that's probably the best.
Well, they know.
I'm not going to stop. It's like... someone who smokes. I smoke. If I don't want to stop smoking, I'm not going to stop.
And trust me, I'm not going to bug you, because I had a stepdad that smoked and he would try to quit and it was unbearable being around him. So you just keep smoking.
Right. But what I'm saying is you're not going to stop doing these things until you want to stop. And I think it's such a compulsion. It's a part of their personality. It's a part of who they are. They can't stop.
Mm-mm.
No matter what you do to them, they're not going to stop. There's no amount of therapy that's going to change them.
He would have, I think, if he was left out and they wouldn't have caught him. Like, if somebody wouldn't have seen him coming out of that place, or he wouldn't have left that girl alive, they probably, because with the witness that was left alive, that's how the one guy was able to identify him. Like, if he would have found her under the bed, and just FYI, if you're killing a room full of people, check and make sure nobody's hiding anywhere. I mean, that's just common sense.
You might want to do a final sweep.
You might want to check closets. You might want to check under the bed. Check behind the couch.
Now, I know there were 9 of these bitches.
I mean, just to be even if...
But I've only killed 8.
I'm just saying.
Hmm.
Just do a sweep. But he probably would have turned into a serial killer. I really do think he would have kept going.
His thing was knives.
And I think you're right. I think there was a sexual aspect to the knives. I don't know what it's called, but they used the knife penetration as sexual penetration.
It was always a knife.
He had a gun, and he didn't even use it.
He could have had a thing for blood, maybe. I don't know. To me, though, I think trying to debate on how these motherfuckers tick, fuck that. I think we just put a bullet in their head. Honestly, I mean, you could case study the shit out of them after they're dead.
I don't understand why people think their lives are worth something.
Well, and they'll say, well, we need them alive so we can study them. They're not going to tell you the fucking truth.
You know what? You study them for 30 days and then kill them.
Here's the thing. They're not going to fucking tell you the truth. As much as we want to believe Ed Kemper did, he didn't tell you everything. If your thing... is killing a girl and putting a hamster in your ass. Let's just say that's your thing.
You're going to leave out the part of the hamster in the ass.
Correct. So what have you learned other than what you already knew?
That they killed, they right. chop heads off.
Right. BTK. You think, honestly...
They keep stuff to themselves.
No, because that's their truth.
Oh, yeah.
That's their memories. That's how
they're
relive.
Not going to tell. They'll tell you everything. And Kemper, he liked to talk. So he would tell you just enough to make you come back.
Because he, in a way, he wanted to feel important.
He was lonely.
But he was also lonely. And as sad as that is, and as much as you want to say, gosh, he's... God, that guy, that poor guy. He would chop your fucking head off and then make...
In a heartbeat.
And then stick his dick in your neck.
In a heartbeat.
Right.
So, and this fucking death row and leaving people on death row for years drives me nuts. Why are we supporting these people on death row? There's a reason you're on death row. Kill them.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you want to fix some of the deficit?
Stop taking care of people on death row for 15, 20, 30
years. I actually
years.
Had a good idea, and I don't know if they would ever sanction it, but my idea was, why not just take all these people that were sentenced to death?
Put them on an island.
An island like is that is not escapable. Like, just a...
Put them on Alcatraz.
And then what you do is you say, let's say you got 100 people on an island. You drop enough food for 10 people.
Survival of the fittest.
And just let them go at it.
And if you want to make money off of it...
Videotape. There was actually a movie that was kind of like that. My idea is a lot better, though, I think.
Wasn't that the Stone Cold movie?
Yes. My idea is a lot better, I think. And I think you learn a lot about these serial killers and pedophiles and people that are serial rapists if you just... And actually, I think prisoners of war as well, like dictators and shit, just drop them all there. Just, hey, let's see who's the smartest.
You don't give them any weapons.
No. You got to make your own shit. You want to survive, this is how you survive. And then you can really learn how they tick, right? I think...
There's your study right there.
And if
there.
You like to murder, hey, there's plenty of people for you to murder, and we don't care if you murder them.
No, yeah, go ahead, have
Do
fun.
Do your thing. Hey, man, you know what? Hey, if you want to tie his testicles to his forehead... And what? And hey, go ahead. We don't care.
He might like it, but...
He might like it. I mean, you know.
Give him a little thrill before you kill him.
It's kind of like that, and we should cover this. The guy that was convicted, I can't think of his name, he was convicted of murder. He was on the dark web, and he was advertising that he wanted to eat somebody. And then it was like,
oh, yeah,
Cannibal
he
Cafe.
Was,
But the guy...
Italian, that, wasn't he, or something?
Right. And the guy that said, yeah, I want to be eaten.
Yeah, I don't think he should have gotten in trouble. He shouldn't have went to jail for that. Because the guy gave... I think he even writ out a statement saying... Right. I think he was sick or something, or he was suicidal or some shit. And he's like, I'm allowing this person to kill me and eat me. This is of my own free will. The guy shouldn't have gotten in trouble. Because he had the permission of his victim.
Right, and not that I like cannibals, I don't. I don't understand it.
But he's not just going out and killing some random person.
Right. I mean,
he had permission to kill
and
this
the guy
person.
Knew it, too, because he cut his wiener off and he was, like, frying it. He's
well,
like,
they were going to eat it together.
Well, he's like, hey, you want a piece of this? Or
He's like,
no, I'm bleeding to death, so I don't think I should eat the wiener. But I'll go ahead and eat your wiener. And
well,
then,
they were going to... Yeah, he was going to eat some of himself before he killed him. But the thing is that he gave permission for this guy to do that. So, I mean, I don't think... I think he should have been convicted and put in jail if he'd done that to just some random person.
No, but I think cannibalism is against the law. I don't think...
Yes, it is.
So he should have been convicted on that.
On that, but not murder, because, I mean, it's basically suicide... Is no different than suicide by cop.
Or assisted suicide.
Or assisted suicide. It's no
but
different.
That's illegal too.
It is, but...
It wasn't cold blood murder.
It wasn't cold blood murder. He had permission. The guy's like, yes, please do this.
Weird as fuck.
And that was that guy's kink too. He wanted to be...
I know, but can you think about that? That is just a weird fetish, right? That is a one-time deal.
That's like, it.
Yeah.
That's all you're going to get.
I've dreamed my whole life of somebody eating me, but I could only experience it once.
Right.
Wow. I mean, you have to be fucking dedicated, like, to that. Like, and what if you do it and you're like, oh, I don't like this so much. Well,
yeah, well, at this point, you're fucked because you're dying.
I don't know if we're going to save you. I'd save you in the freezer. I mean, that's probably the best we can do. I just think that people like that, there was such an urge for that guy. That he was willing...
To kill himself. Yeah, to die so that he could experience.
So he could experience it. That's not an urge that you're going to fix.
It's not.
You're not going to fix it. And eventually, if he had the opportunity...
He's
going to
take it.
It happened.
Yeah.
He's seen it on a post board on the dark web, and he was like, oh shit, that's me, that's my time, that's my opportunity, I need to do this. I just don't think
we're gonna, it happens all the time.
I just don't think keeping them alive is like we're gonna learn what we need to learn. I know the FBI and, you know, they're all like, yeah, we, you know, we can, we're profilers now. They're not telling you everything.
But they did learn some stuff. I mean, you are learning stuff from these people. They're not going to tell you everything. And I think that guy even said, the guy that started the whole profiling thing said, they're not going to tell us everything.
Right, because
but what
some
they
things...
are willing to tell us will help us figure this out. Maybe try to stop it in future before they get too far, or how to follow the patterns.
I do see the sense if maybe they're showing, like, hey, look, I'm sick. I know I can't stop. I don't want to be released. But if I can help in some way, like if I can, you know, I don't want to be released, but if I can read the Bible to people over audio, if I can help the FBI, if I can, you know, do those things, you know, maybe my life is worth something. Maybe I do have a little bit of, I don't know. Maybe I do feel bad for the things that I did. I don't necessarily feel bad because I fed my urge. I feel bad because I hurt other
people.
In
the after effect, yeah. But, Speck, you ain't gonna learn nothing from this motherfucker.
No, and I think that's the example there where you say, I gotta shoot you in the head. I don't know what
you
else.
You're not gonna learn anything from him because he said repeatedly, I don't feel bad about what I did. And he had more fun in jail than out.
Yeah.
So why keep him alive?
And don't get me wrong, Mindhunter is a great show, but I don't think Ed Kemper was as cuddly as they make him look.
Now, well, from stuff that I've read and stuff that we've heard, he looked just like that.
Would you take a ride from him?
Fuck no.
No. No. That's what I'm saying. He turns into a different person.
But you also have to think of the time frame, and you got to think of the people, because now you look at somebody coming at you, even if you're just out somewhere and you're walking and you see somebody and you're like, uh-uh, and you move to the other side.
No, follow that instinct.
Some people just don't have that instinct in them.
Yeah, I mean, that when your hair starts standing up on the back of your neck, that that is a primal response for fear or preparation, fight or flight. That is primal. That is ingrained in you. It cannot be changed. If it happens, listen to it. Something's going on. Your body's trying to tell you something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee that happened with some of these people, and they did not listen to it. BTK's victims didn't have the opportunity.
Because they were all prostitutes.
Right, but the people got in Ed Kemper's car. You're getting in his car.
Well, Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy. Holy shit. Jeffrey Dahmer.
I wouldn't have even...
Of course, Dahmer's victims, they were all drunk and stuff, so I get that. Maybe they didn't have that opportunity, but just look at some of these people. Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, that's what I don't get. And then the Night Stalker guy, everybody fawning all over him.
Oh, yeah. Richard Ramirez.
I am sorry, but to me, I don't get the attractiveness. I get the...
It was the rock and roll.
It doesn't matter. And if Bundy's thing was, you know, the talking and charming you was what made him attractive, I wouldn't have given him the opportunity to talk to me. Like, if he came up to me with a broken arm saying, hey, can you help me with this? I'll be like, lifeguard, right there.
I will break your other arm if you come near me.
I mean, no, I'm sorry. The better question is, what are you doing at a lake with a broke arm and a boat?
Exactly.
No. How you paddle in that boat?
This all this shit seems weird.
Right.
No, I mean, and I think that nowadays we're more alert to that. You know, can you help me carry this to my car?
Even
now, you know, with the human trafficking, which has been going on forever, centuries. Now it's more publicized. You know, females are involved with recruiting people. That's what they call it, recruiting. They're involved with luring females and stuff into these, you know, and the thing is, we're more aware of it now, so I think a lot of us already are on the alert and saying, okay, I'm not going to talk to fucking anybody.
How I've always been.
I ain't talking to you. Now, and guys, we're not out of it. I mean, we're just as vulnerable. You never know why somebody wants you. You could be that urge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have to be on the alert with these people. Jesus Christ, I'm researching some of these people. It's just,
and my question is how? You got 8, 9 people, if you count the bitch underneath the bed. Why ain't you screaming your damn heads off?
I mean, there is strength in numbers, guys. Look, I will say this.
People 2 blocks away would have heard me throwing a fit.
I will say this. There is strength in numbers.
They could have overpowered him.
But I will also say that you know you're going to die anyway. So why not?
This motherfucker will get some hurting.
Let's make as much noise as we can. Let's draw attention to what's going on. I mean, if someone approaches you in a parking lot with a gun and says, "You're coming with me?" No, I'm not. No, you're going to kill me. I know you're going to kill me eventually.
But somebody go hear it.
But we're going to do this shit right here.
We're going to be like Kevin Hart with the rape whistle.
Right. You're going to fucking get me right here. I ain't going anywhere with you.
What if he says, you may be able to kick my ass, but you ain't going to be able to hear tomorrow morning.
Right. I just, you know, I've got daughters. You know, of course I'm married. That's the biggest thing I've told them. Do not go anywhere with somebody you do not know. I do not care if they have a gun on you, if they are threatening you. You do not go anywhere with anybody you do not know, because all they're going to do is take you someplace, do something bad to you, and kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Well, even if you do know them. I mean, half the time, you just don't know.
Right. You have a better chance right then of getting away if you fight. Fight. Get away. Do whatever you got to do. But don't go with them. Whatever you got to do. Make a big enough fuss. Most of the time,
they're going to back off.
And they're going to run away.
Yeah, because they don't want attention drawn to them.
Anyway, that ends our podcast. I know we went in a couple different directions, but I'm really passionate about this stuff. The next piece of shit we're going to talk about, Albert Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, he's horrible.
Speaking of cannibals.
Yeah, he is horrible. Vampire, werewolf, he thought he was all kinds of shit. Anyway, we've enjoyed having you here as our guest, and we hope you enjoyed the first episode of our second season.
Yep.
We'll try to not
have a couple months in between.
Well, we know what happened. I mean, everybody knows what happened, what's going on right now, the landscape of our country and what's going on. So, and, you know, we've been sick ourselves and trying to keep our family safe and well. So I'm sure everybody understands that. But thank you if you are a listener, and we appreciate that you came and spent time with us today.
See you next time. Bye.